Well, Daniele, I'll start with this. That was the most electric game I have personally witnessed all season. Like, in a year where there has not been that much to cheer about, I was legitimately on the edge of my seat. Like, I gotta say, I think at this point in doing this, I don't get too worked up on every pitch, but gosh, I was living and dying on every Bowden Francis pitch. I think everyone had their eyes glued to their TV or were sitting attentively by the radio, but it was a performance for the ages from Bowden Francis. He takes the no-hitter into the eighth inning. Jays beat the Angels 3-1. They win the series, but boy, the story of today's game, the beginning, the middle, and the end of it is going to be some brilliant work from Bowden Francis.
Unbelievable. I mean, oh man, show, that was a masterpiece. It was an absolute masterclass from pitch 1 to pitch 117, I guess with the exception of pitch 117. But he was unbelievable. It was complete dominance in terms of his execution, location, sequencing, the way in which he utilized all of his pitches effectively. It wasn't just, you know, and we talked before the game, we emphasized how he's introduced the splitter and how effective of a pitch that has been for him. But the four-seam fastball, the way he commanded the strike zone yet again today, building on the work that he has done in his last couple outings, it was just... it was unbelievable. It was amazing. And I wrote this on Twitter. It was such a privilege to just be in the ballpark for this type of game in this environment. It's the first time, like you show all year, you classified it as, you know, probably the best overall viewing experience as a, you know, as a fan for anybody in this building. You could see how engaged everybody in the stands was. I was watching it from the perch of the perspective of the press box down the left field line. Mm. And it was interesting to see how it evolved because, you know, it's a Saturday game. This team's not in playoff contention. So you see people milling about in the press box for the first few innings. There's a lot of chatter. By the time we hit maybe, show, I would say, the fifth or sixth inning, there was like an influx of reporters that all of a sudden showed up that you didn't see for the first five, six innings. They all just like a mass of humanity arrived in the press box and everybody's sitting at a seat, observing what's going on, completely focused and locked in, and you could get a sense of how impactful, how pivotal this moment was going to potentially be for a franchise that has only had one successful no-hitter, that has taken a handful of no-hitters into the ninth inning before. But to be that close, it was just, again, a testament to the work he's put in, Bowden Francis, to get to this point. He's been so, so good, and it's very real. I used the line, I think it was once is a mistake, twice is a coincidence, three times is a pattern.
That's right.
And then I said at the end of that in our pregame show,
it's a trend.
It's a trend. It's not a pattern because it's real. And he came out and he did that. That's what he gave us today. Unbelievable job by Bowden Francis.
That is Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on Sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. Why don't you give us a call? 416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers for you to dial up. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line is always open. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. Yeah, we're going to be talking a lot about Bowden Francis today, deservedly so. And eight innings, one hit, the one earned run, which was the Taylor Ward home run at the very end there. Three walks, 12 strikeouts. Like Daniele said, 117 pitches, 84 of which were strikes. And Bowden Francis, I thought to myself when we got to about the seventh inning, I think I thought, okay, it's officially a no-hit bid. When you get into the seventh inning, I think it's official. I think you can start. I don't know if you want to say it necessarily. I'm personally not. I don't know if you are particularly superstitious. I am not. I have no real issue saying it, mainly because I don't really think what we do really has any effect on what actually happens on the field, which is why I don't really think it matters. But I might be in the minority on that one. But it's not as though we were up here screaming the words "no hitter" in the booth like for the rest of the game. But I do think. When that happened, I think everyone, to your point, I mean, you're in the press box, I was here, everyone was taking it a little more seriously. Mm-hmm. Like, Sportsnet Stats tweeted something out where they said, I think they said, I think the exact wording, here it is, Bowden Francis Was the 12th pitcher in Blue Jays history to allow no runners on base via a batted ball through eight innings. That's how they described it. They were essentially saying he's the 12th hitter in Blue Jays history to take a no-hitter into the ninth inning, but they didn't want to use the word no hits
or no hitter.
So, and they even said, we won't jinx it.
Oh, they even put it in the tweet.
They
okay.
put it in there, so, which is pretty funny. Here's the list of Blue Jays no-hitters broken up in the ninth inning since Dave Steeb did it in September of 1990. Okay, this is also from Sportsnet Stats. Great work by them, as always. So, Bowden Francis today versus the Angels. Brandon Morrow, August 8th, 2010 versus the Rays. Dustin McGowan, June 24th, 2007 versus the Rockies. Roy Halladay, if we all remember this one, I think, September 27th, 1998 versus the Tigers. Yep. And David Cone, June 17th, 1995 versus the Rangers. Though that's the list of Blue Jays no-hitters broken up in the ninth since Dave Steeb did it in 1990.
I have goosebumps. I really do. I had goosebumps throughout the course of the ballgame, sitting in the press box looking over things. Funny enough to mention the nerves aspect of it. When I get nervous, I kind of get jittery, and what I do is I have a tendency to like pound, you know, when you tap your foot on the ground, and I'm sitting there and I'm doing that. I literally, from maybe the fifth inning onwards, that's what I was doing. I had this tweet in the fifth inning, and I said, Bowden Francis has completed five scoreless innings against the Angels. He's established a new career high with nine strikeouts, because that was significant at the time. I said, oh, and yes, there's something else that I'm conveniently avoiding. Call me superstitious, which was my way of acknowledging at that point he had
successfully.
Well, in that moment, and then I saw some other people sort of allude to it. I was like, okay, forget it. Let's take the gloves off here. Let's just call it what it is. He's trying to throw a no-hitter, and he was tremendous across the board. But if we look at his last four starts now, too, show,
sure.
And this is bigger picture.
Yeah.
Last four starts, 27 innings pitched. He's gone at least seven in three of those four outings. Only four earned runs allowed, 34 strikeouts, four walks. As Ben alluded to on the broadcast, 19 straight scoreless innings, 19 straight before Taylor Ward broke up the no-hitter with that home run. This is unbelievable. It's a revelation for this team. It's a revelation for what the team could be like, could look like moving forward. Just phenomenal across the board. 15 swing and misses, 15 whiffs today, show. That's a career high. Oh, after he set a career high in his previous start last weekend against the Cubs, which was 14 whiffs in an outing. I mean, it's just unbelievable, and it's really important for what it means in terms of how this rotation looks, projecting even long term in the future.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. 590, 590, name and location. That's the People's Text Line. I see a whole whack of text here. We will absolutely get to them on the People's Text Line. My question for you, before we go to the phones, my question for you guys is this. I asked this question last, I think it was Sunday, because I guess that was the last start for Bowden Francis against the Cubs on the road at Wrigley, but I asked this last week, and I'm curious what you guys think after almost pulling off a no-hitter today, so I can only imagine what the answers will be. But what more, if he has not done so already, does Bowden Francis have to do for him to be your fifth starter next season? I am curious. 590-590, name and location is where you can text us, or you can give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Jake in Toronto. Jake, I understand you were at the game. It was electric here today.
Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable. Honestly, the atmosphere was amazing, and what I found very funny was that everyone was very loud, but at the same time, nobody really wanted to mention what was going on, but everyone was very aware of what was happening. So to sort of add on what you guys were talking about, I was just like, the last four starts have obviously been unbelievable for him. And to me, I don't know what else he can do to earn that spot in the rotation next year, because I think he definitely deserves to be there. Just curious.
So you're pro Bowden in the rotation next year, Jake?
Yes, 100%. And my other quick question for you guys was, they're going to play five in Boston. If they win all five, do we have a chance at anything? Maybe the wild card? Maybe?
Oh, okay, JK. Yeah. Appreciate the call, man. Thanks for joining us. I'll say no, I'll say this. It probably buries the Red Sox chances of making the playoffs. If the Jays go out there and take like 4-5 or 5-5, the Red Sox, who are 7 games above 500 entering play today, there is no shot they're making the playoffs. Like, mm-hmm. I think they're the next team. They're like I think entering play today, they were just behind the Twins. They're like the fourth team, essentially. If the Twins were in the third wild card spot, the Red Sox were the correct. Fourth team, and they were still like 3.5 games back of the Twins. So like, if they lose 4-5 to the Blue Jays, no shot on the Red Sox making the playoffs. I would still say, because you have to jump so many teams to get to where the Twins are, I'm going to say no. But on the Bowden Francis stuff, I think for me, and this is going to sound kind of like being a bit of a downer after he almost completed a no-hitter, I want to see him, and he doesn't have to almost throw a no-hitter going forward. That would be an absurd bar to clear for literally any human being for the rest of time. But I think for me, you want to see him take what he's done with the fastball. Again, the velos look great. It's never really dipped, so you know we can mention the velo, but it's looked good the whole time he's been on this great run. You want to see him continue with that. You want to see him continue with the great command with the fastball. The splitter looked great, and you mentioned it. He threw 5 different pitches today. The other 3 pitches also worked great. I mean, everything was working for him today, right up until the Taylor Ward home run, essentially. But everything was wonderful for Francis. But I just want to see him take that and do it against slightly better teams.
Okay.
That's my only caveat. I'll say this. If he goes out, because I think the way it lines up now, and I believe we've heard, I think it was earlier this morning, actually, that Schneider wants to continue, and this is the whole team making this decision, not just John Schneider, but the team wants to continue trying this kind of like pseudo six-man mm-hmm. rotation. I mean, Ryan Yarbrough got like the quote-unquote start the last time out. I know Ryan Burr was the opener, but Yarbrough effectively had a start because he went 5 innings. Let's call him the starter for that. Ryan Yarbrough is going to be in the plans. Jake Bloss, it looks like, is going to be in the plans when it comes to kind of elongating the rotation, giving every one of these guys one more start towards the end of September. So if that is the case, it kind of, with the days off at the beginning of September, because there are no days off until Labor Day, essentially. So because of that, I think it does make it a little bit murky as to where everyone lines up. But I think it essentially lines up out in Francis against either the Phillies or the Braves, I think. And the Phillies are playing here for 2 at the Rogers Center. And then there's a 3-game set in Atlanta mm-hmm. on the weekend against the Braves. And then there's the Mets right after that as well. So we'll see how it kind of lines up for Bowden Francis. But I'll say this. Any of those 3 teams, and I think it's pretty likely it's the Phillies or the Braves, any of those 3 teams or any of those 2 teams, if Bowden Francis goes out there and looks even like 75% of what he's looked like in these last 4 starts, he's in there for me. I'll say that. Unless after that he gets like touched up by the Rangers, probably is where the next star for him lies, or the Red Sox, the Marlins right after that, right towards the end of the year. We'll have to see how many more starts he gets, probably 2 or 3. If he gets touched up a little, maybe it does make it a little bit of a different conversation. But if he can go out and do anything close to what he's done over these 4 games against one of the Phillies or the Braves, I think I'll be convinced.
I think so. For me, personally, I don't know what else he has to prove.
A lineup that has like Joe Adell and Nico Cavadas and like Kevin Pillar in there, it's not the same as like Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber and so on.
I agree, but no. What I'm saying though is, from my standpoint, I feel like what we're seeing, our eyes are telling us a story as well, and he looks like a different pitcher than the guy that started the season. And I was pretty optimistic about what he possibly could be. And we're not saying that you're going to get this version of him, right? You're not going to get the version that has gone 4 straight starts where he's only allowed 4 combined runs in those outings, and he's on an absolute tear where he's thrown at least 7 innings in each of his last 3 starts. I don't think you're going to get that. I don't think that version is sustainable. But what I do ultimately believe he already is, likely he projects as a 4 or 5 starter in your rotation.
Yeah.
And if that's the parameters under which we're operating, to me, I feel already confident enough to say, yeah, if we went into 2025 with number 44 penciled in as one of those 2 guys at the back end of your rotation, I'd feel good enough about it, because I think the ceiling is this type of version of him, but the floor is still safe enough that I'm confident with where he's at. I understand some people might say, okay, do it against better competition. I will throw in the caveat. He pitched against Baltimore and he looked all right.
He did.
I know this is twice now the Angels. I get it. The Cubs, though, are a team that is supposed to be competing for something, and he was able to snuff out what could have been a potential series sweep last weekend at Wrigley Field. And the way it lines up, you're spot on. We're going to kind of get an answer to your question about how does he look when he faces a better, more potent lineup. He's going to probably line up to pitch against the Red Sox this week or Minnesota, depending on how they sort of align the rotation. And then right after that, it'll be either Philadelphia or Atlanta, potentially
maybe
the Mets.
Yeah,
depends.
Maybe, yeah.
So there you go. I understand. But my parameters for the criteria I'm using to define what I want as my fourth or fifth starter is, can you give me five or six? And can you do it where you're keeping the team in the game? And I feel like my eyes are telling me, with his repertoire and the adjustments he's made, he's fit for that type of role, and he can do it. He can execute it for this team when they need it in 2025.
590-590, name and location is the text line. I ask you guys the question as to what more does Bowden Francis have to do, if he has not done so already, to claim that fifth starter spot in the rotation. So Daniele says it's done. It's a done deal for him. I just want to see him do it for me against maybe slightly better competition. But still, I think he definitely has a leg up on most people. 590-590, name and location is the text line. And a lot of you guys texting in. So let's see. This one is from Tony from Kitchener. Tony, who texts in often. Tony, we appreciate it. Tony says, Bowden is the fifth starter for next year. It's not a question show. I disagree. We don't have much options either way. Also, how long is Lo Perfido under contract for? The kid has massive potential. I mean, he's under contract for a long time. I mean, I don't think he's still in the pre-arb years, I'll say. I'm pretty sure, right?
We'll validate that for sure. Here's
why it is a question. Because there's still a month left in the regular season, and a lot can happen in a month, right? We talked about Chris Bassett potentially being an all-star going into the all-star break, and Chris Bassett has been hit hard in the last, like, essentially since the all-star break. I just don't think you can say it's not a question, right? Because here's the thing. The Blue Jays have a lot of cash to spend, and I think the benefit of getting what you're getting from Francis is that if he does definitively answer the question as to, hey, the Blue Jays don't have to worry about a fifth starter in free agency, then it means they have more money to allocate elsewhere. I think that's like the biggest bonus. Because, hey, I'll say this. Most MLB teams, I would say almost every single one, have kind of like a question mark as their fifth starter. You know what I mean? Like, at the best of times, when it goes well, you get what you get from Francis today. But, I mean, even in the last couple of years, even if you go back to last year, when Hyunjin Ryu came back off the IL after he got the elbow surgery, I know he got knocked around in the very first game, but he was great for, like, pretty much the rest of the season, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, it, like, last year or the year before, Blue Jays fans have witnessed the rotation where 1 through 5, for the most part, have been pretty solid, right? Like 2022, 2023, certainly last year in particular because of the arrival of Chris Bassett and so on. So I think when you look at how the resources can be allocated to the starting rotation going forward, it would certainly be great if you can get even, again, a fraction of what you're getting from Bowden Francis for the rest of certainly this season and next year, because it means you don't have to spend even, like, I don't want to say top dollar, but like mid dollar, let's call it, on any kind of rotation addition. Because I think if that's the case, then you can pretty much, if you want to, pencil in your rotation next year to be Gausman, Berríos, Bassett. And, you know, there's certainly question marks as to whether or not those three are what they'll hold up when they're all a year older. But at least you're going into next season with the three of them. Yariel Rodriguez, I think we already know, is one of the rotation members. And then you got Bowden Francis. And then you don't have to really rush back Alec Manoah.
You got Blas.
You got Trey Yesevich in the minors developing. And he was already viewed to be a guy who would not need quite as much seasoning as, like, you know, as a prep school pitcher or a high school pitcher, for example. So I think you have options. And I think at least to start the year, if Bowden Francis can give you that, it means the offseason dollars can be spent in places the Blue Jays probably need it more desperately, which is to say the offense.
Yeah, my opinion has certainly swayed on this subject. The idea of do the Jays need to invest in pitching in the offseason in terms of going out and signing another, you know, middle of the rotation arm that you can throw in there and have confidence is going to be more of a sure thing. There's more credibility and pedigree than some of the options that we've outlined. My answer a week ago, or maybe slightly more, would have been yes. Now I think about it, and we listed a few of those names, and I'm saying, you know what? It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if you went into the 2025 season with those guys, because for the first time in years, it feels like you actually have some depth, whereas we've talked about it endlessly for months on this program about the inability for the farm system to supplement the major league roster, particularly when it comes to starting pitching. That has been a major, major issue for this team, and that's why last year they were so fortunate to go through an entire season in which they had three guys consistently post for them all the time. Sorry, even if we throw Kikuchi, four guys in there that were consistently posting for them in 2023. That was a huge asset, and it was a massive, massive advantage for the Blue Jays, and it helped them big time because they had no depth in the system. I think that would definitely provide them with a lot more flexibility to be able to go out and address other areas, pour money in elsewhere, to allocate those resources in a different fashion, perhaps more fixated towards the offensive side of the ball.
Please let that be the case.
That would be great. And if that sort of comes to pass, I'd be completely comfortable and content with that. If that's the explanation, hey, we feel good enough about those depth arms, we really wanted to prioritize adding some thump to our lineup, hand up. Joe, I've seen too much run prevention for my liking. Heck, they made the playoffs last year, but got to be honest, it can be a drag at times, so I'm ready to see some offense back in this lineup.
I see Jeremy in the Beaches texting in to say Bowden won't be the Jays' fifth starter if he's pitching like this because he'll be our third starter. So there you go. Jeremy already bumping Bowden Francis up a little higher, Jeremy. In the rotation. I like it. I see another one here. Mike in Alberta. Even though the Blue Jays aren't playoff contenders, that was one of the best games I've listened to, but if Bowden would have struggled a little bit, Blue Jays' offensive side might have had another bad run. Once again, the offense didn't put up the biggest show, but shout-out to Bowden Francis. Great job. There was one from Spez in Brantford. Bowden has nothing whatsoever left to do. Can we say four starts is enough? Yes, we can. I think Bowden can be higher than the number five starter next year. Thanks, guys. There was another one I wanted to read. Oh, Tina from London. Congrats to Bowden. Servin was great, too. Sean from Calgary. Another glorious day in a balcony in Cowtown. I like that one. And there's no name on this one, but certainly shoot us your name and location just so we can give you a shout-out. Holy moly, Bowden Francis looked unreal out there today. Hopefully he can keep up this kind of pace the rest of the way. His stuff was filthy today. And, yeah, I mean, I said this before many times to you, Danielle, and just generally overall, but I think if you're talking about the fifth starter in any rotation in baseball, and, again, most teams in baseball – again, have question marks at best, or like guys like Carson Fulmer, for example, for the Angels. Like it's like guys like that who are, I think, unless you're like the Dodgers, for example, and even, I mean, they might be a bad example because they've had tons of pitching injuries this year,
they've
right?
Cycled,
I mean,
they've cycled been, through a lot of them.
Yeah, the Astros, who have largely been pretty consistent with pitching, have cycled through a bazillion starting pitchers this season as well, right? And those two teams are probably almost locks to make the playoffs at this point, right? So I think even the best teams, my point is, struggle with getting consistent production out of your fifth starter. And I think for the Blue Jays, if you're getting even, and I'm giving you like the bare minimum what I'm hoping for from the starting pitcher, if you're the fifth starter, but five innings, five and a third,
yes,
three runs, maybe even four runs, depending on how the game is going. But like if you're getting anywhere close to that, anywhere even close to a quality start from your fifth starter, you take that and you run for the hills. You take that and you are thrilled if you get that. So, and Bowden Francis has far exceeded that in the last four starts. And you're right, you bring up a good point about his start against the Orioles and how he looked pretty good against them. Like, we can't only say, okay, Angels and Cubs and so on. You know, that's one of the starts. But it's just, I think you are right when we talk about his command. And again, I go back to the usage of the fastball because that his command of that pitch in particular, and I know he brought in the splitter this year, and that's going to be something we talk about, and he uses the sinker sometimes in games as well, and we talk about all these other pitches, but I think for Francis, a lot of his success comes from the usage of the fastball, because I remember in April and May, boy, he was walking guys. He was not locating the strike zone consistently. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he walked three guys today, but it was, you know, I'm not sure that really tells the story of what went on today specifically, but in April and May, it looked like he was really struggling to consistently find the zone with any of his pitches, but most importantly with that fastball. Like, I remember, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, I think it was when the Blue Jays got no hit by Ronel Blanco at Minute Maid Park. I want to say Francis was the pitcher on the other side of that match. I'm pretty sure he was certainly pitching that series, but he got blown up, if you remember. It was one of his first starts of the season.
Oh, yeah.
And he got absolutely rocked.
Yep.
Right? And I remember that one thinking, gosh, like, it's like the command is so poor. And whatever he did, you know, remember there was a time he went on the IL, and then he was kind of coming up to back up Yariel Rodriguez, kind of piggyback starts for a little while, and they were both on the IL. And now he's back up with the team, and his fastball command just looks so much crisper. And I got to say, I've been very impressed. And if he continues that through the end of the year, I'll have no problem making him the fifth or even the fourth starter in the rotation next year.
Good recall on your part. He was indeed on the mound in that no-hitter thrown by Ronel Blanco. Would have kind of been poetic if he threw a no-hitter this year in the season in which he was on the opposite end of the spectrum and got absolutely destroyed in that game as well. He was torched by the Astros bats, and that was April Fool's Day.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it was very early in the season for the Blue Jays. I did actually want to make sure I acknowledged a couple things that have been sort of percolating in my mind. One is kudos to John Schneider, Pete Walker, and company for letting him pitch, for just saying go out there. This is all we know. This. The khakis must have been, their calculators must have been out. The computers were running. Their heads were spinning because they were probably trying to get in John's ear and say, John, don't do it. Don't let him go out there again. And yet he lets him go back out for the ninth inning with 111 pitches. He was already at a career high through seven innings of work, and they stay true to him. And I got to say, we've seen this happen with this franchise in the past where, and look at the postseason as a great example last year with Jose Berríos.
Prefer not to.
You know how you develop equity with your fans and the players? You do that. You let the guy who's pitching well, who's on the cusp of potentially doing something historic, stay on the rubber and take the ball as far as he possibly can. So I just wanted to give kudos there. The second person I did want to acknowledge, Brian Servant.
Sure.
Nobody's going to say anything. But I was thinking to myself, you know what would have been crazy? You ask, who was the catcher to deliver the first no-hitter in more than 30 years for the franchise? The answer would have been Brian Bleepin Servant. And I think he deserves credit because he caught a great game, called a great game, and Bowden Francis obviously executed to the highest of his ability.
Yeah, I don't know if we've gotten to this point yet, but maybe we have, honestly. I'd be interested to hear what Servant has to say. But you know how we kind of got to a point where, like, Manoah had his personal catcher and, like, Berríos had a personal catcher, and, like, they tried to line that up as much as humanly possible, like, to get certain guys catching for certain guys with Kirk and Jano before he got traded, obviously. But Servant has had some good results with Francis. And when Francis went down to the minors, Servant did work with him in the minors, from what I remember hearing. So they seem to have developed some kind of rapport. So if that's the case, hey, you make Servant the catcher for Bowden Francis for the rest of the season. I don't care what happens, right? I think you make sure that happens in literally every start for Bowden Francis for the rest of the year. You mentioned John Schneider. He just finished his media availability downstairs. Let's hear what he had to say when he was asked about letting Francis go as long as he did.
You know, I think there's certain times over people's careers where you just never know. You know, Bowden's battled for a lot of years and has gotten to this point, so I didn't want to take anything away from him. And, you know, Pete and I were on the same page, and without really saying it, you know, those conversations get pretty funny when you get past the seventh, but that was his, you know. It was his until he gave up a hit, and yeah, that was basically it.
Well, there you go. So that's John Schneider talking about the desire, the impetus to take him out when he did. And I mean, look, he gave up the hit. You can, as soon as he gave, even if wasn't a run, I think if he'd given up even just one hit, you knew he was coming out of that game,
for
right?
Sure.
But I think a lot of people had the same mindset as you did, Danielle, and I certainly did as well. I mean, we were up here in the booth watching with binoculars. We all have the binoculars up here watching John Schneider very, very minutely and waiting to see exactly what he was going to do. And I think everyone was waiting to see, oh, gosh, is he going to make the move towards the mound? Is Bowden Francis not going to come back out after the bottom of an inning, for example? But, hey, I mean, you're right. They in the past, we have seen a lot less exciting things happen, and I'm glad they let him in there and let Bowden Francis cook.
No question. I had chills listening to that quote from John Schneider. I mean, maybe that's, I don't know, maybe I'm a simpleton and I get pleasure out of the small little simple things, but boy, oh boy, you know, that was nice. That was refreshing to hear. We didn't have to have some sort of excuse or explanation about why something was or wasn't done. It was, no. We were doing this, and we were going to give him every opportunity to try and get the job done and push it across the finish line. He was excellent across the board today, and it's been this prolonged stretch where he's been doing this now. And, you know, it like I alluded to earlier, it's a revelation because of what the implications could be for the future of the rotation and the role he might serve and occupy for them moving forward as they try to, you know, rebound in 2025, get back to being a relevant competitive team again. And, by the looks of it, he's going to probably play himself yet again into a role of being of consequence for this ball club.
Couple more texts before we take a quick break here. 590-590, name and location. Paul in Toronto says, hey guys, Rodriguez does not necessarily need to be in the rotation. His results in the first, second, third time through the order shows he may be a reliever in the future. I suppose it's not impossible, certainly.
I
do think we've seen enough from Rodriguez, and they still have been so careful with him in terms of the pitch count. And again, his best starts this year have been when he was hyper-efficient, for example, on Canada Day down here at the Rogers Centre. But I think I've seen enough that I just want, in the same way where I want to see a little bit more from Batten Francis, I want to see a little bit more from Yariel Rodriguez in a positive manner, because, of course, if he does show a little bit more, then you have at least a couple spots scratched out for yourself. I mean, Jake Bloss, you mentioned it. There's a real chance Jake Bloss does, in fact, end up pitching for the Blue Jays, even if it's one or two starts this season because of some of his results and the different levels of the minor league system, both with the Houston system and now the Toronto system. So if that's the case, then, I mean, maybe Yariel does profile as a reliever long term. It's just you finally, for the first time, have options, which is definitely great. Dan in Beamsville says, for me, Francis should definitely be in the rotation next year. I say maybe fifth or fourth starter. And these two texts, I like these texts from both Mike and Anthony. Mike in Toronto says, yes, as you mentioned, Doc, before, another pitcher who took a no-no into the ninth. He was also sent down not soon after. Mm-hmm. So who knows if Francis is even with the big league club. I think, like, based on what we've seen, Daniele, I feel like this. He's certainly not getting sent down this year, barring like an injury, for example. But, it's not out of the realm of possibility. But if he ends the year even remotely, like we've said a couple times, if he ends the year now, you know, if the year were to end now, he's in the rotation. If the year ends in a month and he has a little bit of a fall off, maybe. But I think you're right that he has done enough to stay in the rotation for the rest of the season and at least be in contention for that fifth spot next year, again, before we see what dollars and cents get spent in free agency.
That's definitely a fair point raised. The comparison to Doc and what transpired there after he obviously came so close to throwing a no-hitter. I can't remember, was that his first major league start for Halladay? Like, it was really early in his career. I don't remember the specific timing of it. Again, in that instance, this guy, Bowden Francis, is somebody that the expectations have always been essentially low or non-existent, right? It's not like this is a guy who has had hype and fanfare.
Yeah.
And so it's different from this perspective. Roy Halladay was a credible prospect, a valued asset, somebody that was perceived to be a potential fixture in a rotation. I don't think anybody had that thought, or still even today after this, has the thought of, all right, Bowden Francis is going to be leading a rotation one day. But you never know. And it works the opposite way as well. Just as great as he looked today, 2 weeks from now, he might not look the same. That is completely fair and reasonable. But again, from what my eyes tell me, and from what we've seen adjustments-wise, you can point to so many different things that he's doing infinitely better. You were acknowledging the fastball command. You emphasized how it's pretty clear he's improved drastically in that area. If we go even further, we've highlighted how the splitter has been introduced. It's really given me shades of sort of Kevin Gausman's arsenal with the high fastball. Locate the heater, be really, really focused on the location and command of your heater, and then finish guys off with your splitter. Because as I mentioned even in our pregame show, what was Bowden Francis doing a lot of earlier in the season? We saw a ton of curveballs, and his curveball is not good. It's not a great pitch. You want to know how many curveballs he threw today, show? He threw 6 curveballs on 117 pitches. Earlier this season, it was the percentages would break down. Fastball, curveball, you might get a little bit of a slider, then you maybe get a couple splitters mixed in there. That was his the way in which his pitching profile was being dispersed, the usage of his pitches. And today, the curveball, Six times he called on that pitch in 117 pitches thrown. I think that is evidence of how he's evolved and how his pitch mix has become more dynamic, and the way he's approaching at-bat to at-bat, plate appearance to plate appearance. It's evolved, and he's better for it, and that's where I see the most growth. It's not just results. It's how he's going about getting the results.
Before we take a quick break here, Daniele, 590-590, name and location. And again, you want to give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. We're here until the bottom of the hour. But I wanted to get to this text before we take a quick break. Anthony from Oshawa: we shouldn't be making a decision on who's in the bullpen and who's in the rotation until we at least see the free agent and trade markets. But Bowden looks great. We'll see how the fastball is against better teams. I think that's really kind of where I'm at. I just want to see, and again, I'm just so impressed on the April splits to the, you know, the late July, August splits for Bowden Francis, really mostly August splits for Bowden Francis on the fastball. You look at those, they're almost completely different, it feels like. So if that's the case, then I do kind of want to see what this version of Bowden Francis goes and does against any of the, and again, we'll have to see who he lines up against. Frankly, I mean, if he ends up playing against the Red Sox, again, it depends on the doubleheader on Monday makes it a little wonky, and then if they go to a sixth guy and they push everyone back with not a lot of off days until Labor Day, it just make it a little wonky just in the short term as to who's starting when, and the doubleheader obviously never helps things in that regard. But when it comes to who Bowden Francis does it again, if he pitches against any of the Red Sox, the Twins, the Phillies, the Mets, or the Braves, any of those teams, and he does well with the fastball and the splitter and the sinker and so on, I'll be sold. I think I'll be sold.
Okay.
Truly, I will be. And even if he's just like okay, you know what I mean? Even if he goes like 5 1/3 and gives up 3 earned runs, I think I'm still sold, honestly.
Okay. Right.
I'll be completely honest with you, because I do lean more. He looks like a different guy out there, which obviously is a great development for the Toronto Blue Jays. That's Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. Let's take a quick break, Daniele. And when we come back, we'll go back to the text line, 590-590, name and location, and chat about non-Bowden Francis things in this ballgame. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hit a home run today. Joey Loperfido.
My guy.
That's your guy. He continues to look great. There's a lot of stuff to talk about on the other side. Chad Green locking it down yet again. So still lots to get to. You're listening to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, I guess like the human nature is to grab on the negative. I'm just keep thinking about that last pitch, but yeah, I mean, I wasn't scared at all. I was just trying to attack, and it was just one of those things. I felt like that didn't go my way, but I felt like I was in attack mode, and he put a good swing on it.
That is Bowden Francis chatting with the media after 8 innings of one-run ball. Takes the no-hitter into the 9th inning. Blue Jays win 3-1, and they win the series as well. They'll look for a sweep of the 4-game series tomorrow right here at the Rogers Center. You're listening to Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sho Ali, Daniele Franceschi here with you for another 20 minutes or so. So you can still give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. You can certainly text us as well, 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. Standard data and message rates may apply. Bowden Francis kind of sounding a little emotional there, Daniele. I mean, he's a pretty zen guy from what I've heard. I've never actually had a conversation with him, but everyone has described him, like all the Sportsnet people. Julia's talking to him many times, and I think I've gotten from everyone that he's like pretty laid back, pretty cool dude, right? And so I don't think I've heard many sound bites of him when he has a lot of emotion in his voice. So I totally get what he's saying, though. It is human nature to focus on the negative than it is on the positive.
Yep.
But I mean, I feel like even though I understand, not a lot of negatives for Bowden Francis today. He was phenomenal.
There were no negatives. Even the home run he serves up, but at that point, that was his 117th pitch of the ball game. I mean, he got to that point. That should be celebrated. To be on the doorstep of what would have been a historic accomplishment, that should be acknowledged and celebrated. Sho, you know, you're talking to the chief cynic among all of us here in this booth, in this stadium. I am routinely the number one cynic when it comes to anything pertaining to the Blue Jays or Toronto sports in general. And I'm saying, Bowden, take a bow, my friend. Relax. Relax. He pitched a great game. He was excellent. Absolutely excellent. And I understand. I think it's funny that he did allude to the fact human nature is we do tend to focus on the negatives. And so he's probably like, darn it, I really just missed out on an incredible opportunity. It was right there. And I get it. You never know if you're going to be back in that position again. But also, in retrospect, I'm sure tomorrow or later tonight when he goes home, he's going to have the opportunity to be like, man, that was pretty darn cool. And I came really close to doing something special, but we can still celebrate it. Because I can assure you, for the 34,000 plus that were in the building today, that's a memory. That's something that they're going to remember. You know, there's a lot of games that come and go, but that's one that you could say, oh, I was at the Bowden Francis game where he almost threw a no-hitter. That's something I always talk about with my one of my most formative baseball memories as a kid was being at the Brandon Morrow game against the Rays. And I remember being so captivated and thinking, oh, my God, might see something historic happen here. Sure enough, came really close, didn't happen. But people still reference that to this day. I know Ben Schulman even was located to our right during the game. After the no-hitter was broken up, he even said, he alluded to the fact that he was in attendance for the Brandon Morrow game and how you remember those things. And so, yes, it was still a very, very special day here at Rogers Center, a special performance for Bowden Francis.
590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. Get to a couple more texts before we say goodbye. There's a text here from John in Alberta, in Westlock, Alberta. Hey, guys, could Alec Manoa be ready to start the season? Because we were talking about the rotation, right? Could Alec Manoa be ready to start the season? Will his recovery from surgery take longer than that? Same question on Ricky Tiedemann. So if I recall correctly, the recovery time on both surgeries is 12 to 14 months. And if that's the case, so Manoa had his surgery like mid-June. Mm-hmm. Tiedemann had his surgery mid-July, thereabouts. So I think for Tiedemann, especially considering he'd already, when he got the injury, not been that much, not that built up, I would say there is a good chance he misses the entirety of next season before he is ready to like really start pitching in earnest again. I think there's a chance Manoa is ready, much like Ryu was last year. I think there's a chance, maybe by the deadline, we're seeing Manoa for about a month or a month and a half, let's call it, depending on how long it takes him to get built up on rehab assignments, for example, which I'm sure is not going to be that long. So I'm betting by, like mid-August, beginning of September, we see Manoa next year. I'm just throwing that number out. Maybe he has the Wolverine blood and he heals very quickly. Who knows? But I'm just saying I do think that 12 to 14 months is a typical recovery time. So there's almost – I would say there's a 0% chance either of them are ready by, April.
No doubt about that. I tend to agree with you. I think of the two, certainly, I feel like Manoa has a better chance of actually contributing for this team. And that's not an indictment on Ricky Tiedemann from a talent standpoint. No. What it is, it's us acknowledging, recognizing the reality of his situation. He's hardly pitched. He has to actually get healthy, first and foremost, and then second to that, go back into the minor league system and put together a reasonable sample to build himself back up, to A, show that the talent is still there, that he can produce results, and on top of that, he will be durable enough to then translate it to the major league level. So I think his road is a little bit longer and more arduous than Alec Manoa, who I think, as you alluded to, Sho, I think there is a realistic possibility that you see him in a Jays uniform in 2025 when he does return, is healthy, goes through a rehab stint, and then has an opportunity to potentially factor in for the Blue Jays.
I see here Rob from Guelph says, these young kids have saved this season, and I am feeling great about next season if they can sign a couple of bangers. I certainly am hopeful for that. Rob also says, if Servin is the Francis Whisperer, can you carry him as your backup personal catcher for him, given what we have seen out of the last 3 or 4 weeks out of Francis? I mean, we kind of talked about
this,
right? But I do think at the very least you're going to carry Brian Servin as much as humanly possible. I mean, he's not going anywhere for the rest of the season. For that, first of all, we know. There are no other like slam dunk catchers you're suddenly bring up now, even when rosters do expand, now over Servin. Servin's the second catcher to Kirk for the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. I think that's like a done deal, barring some kind of freak injury, essentially, right? But if that is the case, I mean, they're certainly going to try and get Servin lined up with Francis, I think, as much as humanly possible, no? I think, based on what you've seen, not just today, but in the last like couple weeks.
I don't know if the question extends to even beyond this season, if that is what the texter is asking.
Right.
But even in that instance, we have seen, historically, even here in Toronto, the Jays carry at times three catchers, which is not ideal from a roster building standpoint, and I would not advise or recommend doing that. However, it has happened before, And namely, the I guess the you know the obvious example was R.A. Dickey, because of the fact he's throwing a knuckleball. Yeah, different know. Circumstances. So I don't think this front office would sit there and you know be compelled to hand tender a contract to Brian Servant and say, hey, stick around for 25, other than being potentially the third catcher for this organization. Apart from that, though, I don't know that even, you know, the success in the relationship that he's maintained with Bowden Francis would put him in a position to then have a role just because of that aspect of his game. It's great. It's fun. It's important that you have a great battery between pitcher and catcher, but I think certainly you would, if you're a team, you're thinking, oh, we can develop that. We'll figure that out. Let's get the most talented guys on the field.
Jay from Regina says, if Schneider had gone to the bullpen to start the ninth, I would have literally given my TV the Randy Savage elbow from the top of my coffee table while screaming Schneider's name. I think a lot of people would have.
Yeah.
No joke. Yeah. I think I might have, honestly.
You know, that brings up a good point, though. We've seen this at various points this season alone in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, yeah.
And Paul Skeens. Paul Skeens is, I know it's happened once, maybe even multiple times with him, where he's out there carving, right, shoving guys that are pitching, six, seven no-hit innings, and then they get pulled. We've seen that happen routinely in Major League Baseball, which is why, if we're being honest, when I was sitting there and we got to the sixth and his pitch count is starting to get elevated, I'm thinking he's not going to survive this. He's not, even if he's in a position where he's still recording outs and he's being efficient, as he was, he was going literally 1-2-3 multiple times to record three outs to get out of an inning. I still was skeptical that they were going to let him go because we've seen so much caution being exercised around the sport. And then you could easily say, well, look at all the litany of examples elsewhere.
Sure.
Why would we do it differently? But fortunately, they did do it differently, and they gave him the opportunity to go as deep as he could.
I was legitimately afraid they were going to yank Francis in, like, the seventh inning, and then Zach Pop was going to come in here on, like, the first pitch, give up a single, and everyone would have booed the crap out of him, which honestly, like, wouldn't have been entirely fair, but I think you're not really booing him. You're kind of booing, like, the team or the manager or whatever in that particular sense. But I was deeply afraid of that, and I'm very much happy we did not have to discuss that tonight on Jay's Talk. All right, let's chat a little bit about your guy, Joey Loperfido. He had a very good game. I mean, the guy, in his first two ABs, he saw two pitches, essentially. He took the first one for an RBI double, and he took the next one also for a double. I think that one was, in the bottom of the third inning. I think generally, just as a quick aside, Daniele, I think I have generally been pretty okay with Carlos Doubles in that I don't think about him out there all that much, which I think is you don't really want to think about the first base coach, the third base coach, really at all, especially the third base coach on sends, but, you know, Luis Rivera, I think we talked about him quite a bit, unfortunately. But we don't really talk about Febles all that much, and I'm here for it. But not the greatest send on the Loperfido double I think I've ever seen in the bottom of the third inning. Maybe they're taking a chance because it's like Leo Jimenez. Not to like slag the guy, but it's not Vladdy standing at the plate. It's Leo Jimenez. Maybe you take a little bit of a chance with the margins being relatively thin still at that point. But I think that's the first time, I think maybe all season, where I was like, ugh. I'm not sure what he was thinking there.
Yeah, it in the moment, it certainly felt like the first time all season where I was like, oh, yeah, that's right, Carlos Fabelis is the third base coach. And, you know, there's never been a need to single him out for anything, which is, as you said, Joe, a positive. Although, in also big picture, on a more macro level, it does highlight, you know, this team at times, they're very sloppy and lazy. Like, on the bases, I've said it before, I think they're a really poor base running team for the most part. Although statistically, you won't find that's the case. Why? Because they don't run a lot to begin with, but they do make mistakes when they run.
Hey, you know what,
though? It's interesting.
I'll say this about Joey Loperfido, though. He, on the RBI double, the ball was cut off by the right fielder out there. The ball didn't get all the way to the wall, and he still got to second base.
So
that was some pretty good base running by Loperfido. Your guy, Loperfido.
My guy, Loperfido. No, I think he's looked fantastic. I made the point in our pregame show. Even when you watch the at-bats, you could see how he just looks more relaxed.
Yeah.
It's crazy how you can, just reading body language, get a sense that he feels more comfortable when he steps in the box than he did 2 weeks ago, let's say. So that now makes him 12 for his last 27 after today. 12 for his last 27 at the plate with three doubles, two triples, and two home runs. He's been excellent. And I think you're seeing now because he's comfortable, because he's a little bit more relaxed and at ease, you're seeing the natural ability take over, right? And I don't know. I spoke with our colleague Chris LaRue before the game, and I asked him, are you seeing anything different, like mechanically? Because when I look at him, I do see him maybe a little bit more loose with his front side. His foot isn't inverted. His front foot isn't as inverted. There's a little bit of a leg kick being kind of introduced, more of a toe tap because he's just kind of lifting it off the ground a little bit. And it feels like because of that, he's just having more success, and he feels like he can cover more of the plate than he was previously. So, I mean, I've been really encouraged and impressed, and he deserves hats off to him today because he was excellent. Obviously, the big story is Bowden Francis, but other than that, I thought he was a highlight for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, I think if you can get, because you know, I think a lot of people would agree in the first little while for Loperfido, when he was what 4-for-36 or whatever it was, he was not looking particularly great in his first like 10 games with the Blue Jays. And I think I don't think anyone had the concern that he was going to suddenly get cut or jettisoned from the organization because they just acquired this guy and he's still quite young, like young all things considered, quote unquote. But you know, I do wonder when it comes to Loperfido in terms of what his stature on the team is for next year. If he can keep up anything close to what he's done recently, you know, maybe there is a shot that he breaks camp with a team, a Blue Jay, not a Bison, for example.
Oh, yeah.
And I think even his role is like the fourth outfielder, again, much like the Francis conversation, that allows you to allocate dollars and roster moves and assets essentially to other open parts of the lineup. Like if you're talking about the shopping list the Blue Jays have going into 2025, I think for me it would probably be a hard-hitting left fielder, a great DH, and again, you can find creative solutions to all of these problems, certainly. But I would say from the position player standpoint, left fielder, DH, maybe third base, maybe, depends on how you feel about Ernie Clement, backup catcher, probably, and then you're looking at reconstructing virtually the entire bullpen, and I think the question is still there about the fifth starter, but again, you might have a lot of those questions answered, right? Like, Bowden Francis may have answered the fifth starter question. Ernie Clement may have answered the third base question, and maybe if Joey Loperfido is answering the fourth outfielder question, then suddenly you have far more dollars to spend on fewer positions, which I think makes your dollar go farther, essentially.
Yeah, you can prioritize things a little bit better. It's easier to sort of create your shopping list is potentially going to be cut in half, which is then going to allow you to rethink how you're allocating that money. So maybe even, and that could be in this, from this perspective, let's say the Blue Jays have a priority list and a wish list of targets that they want to pursue. Anthony Santander, for example, might still be on this list regardless of if they feel like they have answers or don't at other positions. But what this enables you to do potentially is to go further than you may have initially been willing to budget more for that player than what you previously could have been capable of doing. Even from that perspective, it certainly helps what your roster building strategy could be and the flexibility that is built in for you with your roster moving forward. I still think, and we've both established this, two things. One, you got to be careful. You don't want to be seduced by a lot of what you see because, again, it's meaningless games for the most part. The stakes are not as high, right? We don't even if Joey Loperfido goes on a tear to finish the season and he looks great for another 5 weeks, realistically, when we look at the baseball reference page, has he accumulated 500 plus at bats? No. So you don't really have a full assessment of what he is as a player. And that applies to a lot of the guys on that roster. You just got to be careful with that and make sure you don't get seduced by a lot of what we see. Be optimistic, be hopeful, but don't get fully seduced. You still need some more established guarantees in your lineup.
I also think it helps at the very least, because I think I agree with you. You don't want to like suddenly fool yourself into thinking, well, we can backfill every position from within the organization. I'll put it this way. If that's what happens this offseason, fans are going to revolt, right? Because that's effectively what happened last season, last offseason, and then the biggest additions of the offseason ended up being like Justin Turner and IKF and Kevin Kiermaier, right? None of whom are on the team now. So I think when you look at what's happening in the coming offseason, I mean, who knows? Maybe Anthony Santander doesn't go to free agency. Maybe before he goes to free agency, maybe the Orioles re-sign him. Who knows? Like, that's very possible.
It's possible.
Right? Maybe Alex Bregman re-ups with the Astros. Who knows? Like, there's no guarantee as to who actually is available come the opening of free agency when the season is over, for example, right? So I think that's one thing. But I do think if you can get as many questions answered by the Francis's of the world and the Clements of the world and the Loperfidos of the world and so on, and knowing that for some of these guys, Loperfido probably more than most, having the smallest sample size so far, that you can at least insulate yourself like to a degree if Bregman or Adames or Teo or any of these guys are unavailable in the offseason because they either go to another team or they just re-sign with their current teams, all of which are entirely possible, right? I feel like Willy Adames is going to be a free agent because he's a shortstop. Shortstops get paid lots of money. But, I mean, Teoscar Hernandez, if the Dodgers win the World Series, he could easily just re-up with the with the Dodgers, for example. And I don't think anyone would blame the guy, right? Yeah. So I think there's a lot of question marks still to be had. And that was to the texter's point from before. I think it was Anthony who had texted in earlier about the, you know, you have to wait to see what the free agent market is like in the trade market. So I think that's a good point. Before we go, got to talk about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. again.
Absolutely.
I mean, I feel like we could probably spend a chunk of Jay's talk talking about Vladdy every single game for the rest of the season. And it's probably something positive based on how he's been playing, but he cranks his 27th home run of the year, gave them a little bit of breathing room in the end of the game. I know it was 2-0 for the entire game, basically, until that point. Vladdy made it 3-0. Ward made it 3-1. That was the final score. But Vladimir Guerrero Jr. cranks his 27th home run of the season. Daniele, he has now hit more home runs than he did all of last year.
Yep.
Last year, he had 26 home runs. Vladdy is now officially at 27, and there are still, what, 30-odd games left, a little over 30 games left.
Exactly 32 games remaining.
32? Okay,
yeah.
So there you go. You got 32 games remaining. Vladdy has already surpassed his high from 2023. His in 2022, he hit 32 home runs, so still well within reach. He essentially has 32 games to hit 5 or 6 home runs effectively. So I think it's safe to say Vladdy has been having the year you wanted him to have for quite some time. We'll see how it finishes for him, but it's nice to see him go out there in a moment where you still need some run support and him delivering in a big moment.
Yeah, Vladdy's back. Vladdy's back. It's nice to say that. He's back to being an extremely threatening force every time he steps into the box. He got intentionally walked today,
yeah,
right? In, again, a game between a team that's 20-plus games below 500, another team that's below 500, both teams with no realistic shot of being up in the postseason, clearly for the Angels. I mean, the Blue Jays, I don't know, maybe. Who knows? Maybe if they sweep the Red Sox, then we can start that discussion. But he's looked fantastic now for, what, 4 months, essentially? I think the only month in which he struggled actively was April. And another thing, he doubled, obviously, in the first inning in his initial at-bat to open the ball game. Was an RBI double. He now has 34 doubles on the year show, and his career high, believe it or not, is 35. So he's on track to set a career high in doubles. He's obviously batting average is right up there. It's on track to be a career season for him from a batting average perspective. He hit .311 in 2021. He's above that currently at this particular juncture with 32 games left. The power has returned. He's driving in runs. His at-bats look great. His timing is down. What else can you say?
Yeah, he's been phenomenal to watch. It's so much fun to watch Vladdy on a nightly basis. And again, the fans booed when he got intentionally walked, and I get it. Honestly, I get it.
Yes.
I really do.
It was what inning was it?
Oh, gosh.
I don't remember what inning it was. But come on, it's the Angels. Angels and Blue Jays. What's at stake? Let him hit.
Daniele, this is fun, man. Always fun when we get to do Jay's Talk together. And you and I are back, I guess, in a couple weeks.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me. Really fun stuff.
That is Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. Appreciate you all being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in El Monte and Carlton Place, Ontario. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Daniele, for Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Luke Squadron, Nick Blackmore, I'm Sho Ali. That does it for us. We are out of here. I'm back tomorrow solo to put a bow on the series. Like I said before, Daniele is back with me in a few weeks. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday, everyone. I'll talk to you later.